Welcome to CICK News, the only news source in the North truly dedicated to local stories on the ground. CICK News addresses the diverse needs of the underserved communities between Burns Lake and Haida Gwaii through firsthand stories and in-depth interviews. CICK News funding is made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada, the only organization mandated to financially support campus and community radio stations in Canada, as well as the Government of Canada. We are your hosts, Pam Hassan and Dan Messick, and we are on the dial at 93.9 FM, Smithers Community Radio. Our call letters are CICK, and we are broadcasting from the unceded Gitindam territory, home of the Wet'suwet'en Nation. Follow CICK News online at smithersradio.com or follow us on Facebook or Instagram at Smithers Community Radio.
Today on CICK News, as we enter into a new year in 2023, we continue a look back at our work in 2022. Today, we'll revisit the support that grew across Northwest BC, especially here in Smithers, with fundraising and aid for Ukraine after Russia invaded in late February. We'll also take a look at two major events that happened in Northwest BC with Hobie, the Niska New Year, and the All-Native Basketball Tournament in Prince Rupert. Also, we'll review our trip to Maurice Lake in late May to check out the Wet'suwet'en Fish Camp, the critical work being done there to rebuild sockeye populations. We'll look back at our childcare crisis story in Smithers as well. Parents struggle to provide childcare for their kids, and so they are asking the provincial and federal government for help and to take immediate action. And finally, municipal councils look a lot different in BC than they did earlier in 2022. We'll feature a few interviews from former candidates, now Smithers councillors, during the 2022 BC municipal elections in October. First up, though, with the largest Ukrainian community outside Ukraine in Canada, about 1.4 million Ukrainians, Smithers and other communities in Northwest BC rallied together to support the Eastern European country from Russian aggression. Since then, efforts to send aid have been ongoing and several families have relocated to Smithers and other communities in the Northwest, building a sense of unity and hope. Stay with us.
My name is Luba Kazim. I live in Smithers. I grew up in Ukraine, immigrated to Canada about almost 18 years ago. So, my family is here right now. However, my friends are still in Ukraine, and I'm in touch with them right now. Helping however I can, just by, you know, by being there for them and talking to them and supporting them.
Luba, thanks so much for being with us today and giving us your time. Maybe you can describe to me a little bit about how you've been feeling these last few days that we've seen the invasion of Russia into Ukraine. What was going through your head when you first heard the news?
Well, I couldn't believe that it was really happening. It's tough to me to speak, actually, because I haven't been sleeping all these nights, because it's a 10-hour difference with Ukraine, and I've been in touch with my friend pretty much constantly, 24/7, as she was hiding there in the basement, one friend and another friend as well with her family, as my native town was bombed. And shootings are going right now as we speak in the streets of the town. So they're in the basement again. It's been very tough. It's unbelievable. I never in my life have thought that something like this would happen to Ukraine, to people.
Luba, what are you hearing from some of your friends in Ukraine? What are they experiencing right now? Are they safe?
As much safe as you can be hiding in your basement when there are buildings coming down from bombing, being bombed. There are quite a few houses that are destroyed in my native town of Chernigov, quite a few buildings. People are hiding in the basements and the bathrooms, whoever can wear, it's It's tough. The first day, I think all people were panicking. Now I think people are more mobilized, they're more used, I guess, to this, as much as you can even get used to something like this.
Well, I guess, you know, another question is, you know, we are starting to see, you know, quite a lot of people moving to Western Ukraine, also trying to get over the border into places like Poland and Hungary, you know, close to 500,000 people already. Why did your friends decide to stay? Are they helping, as you mentioned, mobilize for the resistance?
Well, there are so many. Well, when the Russia attacked, all the major cities were under attack, and yes, there were a lot of people who were trying to flee the country, who are still stuck on the roads because there is pretty much traffic jam, and with all the tanks and everything and being bombed and everything, there are a lot of people that are in the middle of nowhere in between trying to get out. But my friends were didn't have a choice, don't have a choice anymore, actually. The town is surrounded. There is no way out anymore. All the bridges are blown up. There is no way out. Like, even if they wanted to leave, they can't anymore.
Luba, maybe you can tell me, you know, we're here in Smithers, obviously a world away, half a world away, but you've organized a solidarity rally for later this afternoon. Tell us a little bit about why you wanted to organize this rally in solidarity with Ukraine.
Well, there are people here who do support Ukraine, who support peace, and I think it is important, as little as it can be, our action, our deeds now. Like, it's probably just a drop in the sea, but we cannot just stay silent and not say what we feel and how and that we support Ukraine and Ukrainian people at this moment. I think it is important to also raise awareness around our town, around Canada overall, of what's happening, and support people in the first place.
Maybe we could bring in your co-organizer. Patricia, why did you want to organize this rally? Are you Ukrainian?
For basically the same reasons as Luba. My great-grandparents immigrated to Canada around 1900, and they settled in Manitoba. So most of my roots are, they live in Manitoba and Saskatchewan, but they have come from Ukraine as well. So I do know some of where my family has come from, like about six generations, and where they are, or where my family is from, they're being bombed as well. And we kind of lost contact with family over the years. But yes, I am Ukrainian and Polish.
And I guess, you know, of course, we're watching this, you know, on the news, on the media, you know, through the internet. You know, what does it feel like to see this from afar and trying to do what you can?
Devastating. My heart goes out to everybody there. And I think it's important for people to support what is going on the best way we can, and to learn the history of what has been going on there for hundreds of years, actually. And the most important thing is support and making sure that they get reliable information and sources.
You know, obviously, there's only so much that we can do here in BC, in Canada, but we do have the third largest population of Ukrainians here in Canada. So there is, you know, a bit of a strong relationship there. But, you know, as we're watching this unfold, we're seeing the bombings, we're seeing, you know, Ukrainians put up this fierce resistance to this Russian aggression. But at the end of the day, you know, whether this is geopolitical, you know, politics unfolding, there are people on the ground that are suffering, and we don't know how this is going to play out or how long it will be prolonged. But, you know, what are your hopes? One, you know, in having the solidarity rally, but also, what are your hopes to see in the next, you know, few days and possibly weeks happen in Ukraine?
Well,
Well, I hope there will be an end to it. I hope it will end very soon. And I think we need all hands on the deck from the whole world, really, from all the countries, from Russia as well, where there are Russian people supporting Ukraine as well and going out in the streets and supporting Ukraine, saying that they do not want war. And I think it is, I'm hoping that this will end and people will stay alive, people that are dear to me and other people in Ukraine will, you know, as many people, the more lives we can save, the more lives can be saved, the better.
That was Luba Kasim, a Ukrainian organizer in Smithers, helping to send aid to Ukraine. Up next, Hobie and the All-Native Basketball Tournament are two of the biggest events in Northwest BC. CICK News was able to get front row seats at both events this past year in 2022 to take in the festivities, the energy, and the culture that make these events staples of Northwest BC life.
Matthew Bright, I'm from Lough Falta. Hobie is the most exciting time of the year for us as Mishka people. It's the beginning of our harvest year. In a nutshell, it's been said in the past, our very survival was the beginning of Hobie. After a long winter, Hobie ensured our survival for the next year, and so on, so on. Hobie, it started, it's with the moon. It is said if the moon is upright in a crest form and there's a star on top, that's a good indication of what the harvest season is going to be for the following year. If there's no star, then we're in for a challenge. So it's a big indicator. It's a Lunar New Year, the first moon of every year. It's our heritage, our history. It's who we are as a people. Whenever we bring them to our dances, we need our audiences to feel it. We need them to know our stories. Some of them are emotional, but most of them are happiness. And that's what we intend to do in our performance. It was a big relief after the long, long 2 years. We lost some people to COVID. We had hundreds of our people that were infected by COVID, currently still are, on Nishka lands and off Nishka lands. So it hit home. By getting through it, you know, we were happy. The people, the Nishka people are gathering people. We do things together all the time. And we always invite our neighbors, no matter who they are, we invite them in to help us celebrate. We welcome them.
What's your name?
Christine Smith Martin.
Where are you from?
Originally Loch Balams in Haida Gwaii. I live in Vancouver and part-time here up in the beautiful Naas Valley.
So we're back at Hobie, the first one in 2 years. How does it feel to be back into it?
Oh, it was amazing. I think the first day was a little bit tiring, only because it's been 2 years since I danced. But it was amazing because, everybody's a little bit scared, which is so natural, right? It's going to take us a while to get back into the swing of things. But I think day two, everyone felt the spirit back. Yeah. And I can't even explain to how people felt by not having their culture for 2 years. This is a wonderful event.
What do you love about Hobie? There's so much energy and, you know, just at the end here, everyone circling around the crescent moon, you know, it just looks like family as well, like just finally back together. What's your favorite part about Hobie?
Yeah, I think it's seeing the elders and watching the children dance and the chiefs come in, all of, and the communities, the pride that each of the dance groups have and different songs based on different pieces. So I think it's going to be an amazing, amazing event next year and every year. Like every community should have this because it's so wonderful.
I guess just the last thing, what You know, what does Hobie mean to you? What does it mean now that Hobie has happened?
Well, as far as I understand, Hobie is very much tied to the season coming up, right? It's a harvest season, so we're all getting ready, whether it's olakin, salmon. You know, we really want to make sure that we're getting ready for the new harvest season, so that's what it means to me.
Great.
Those are sounds from Hobie, the Nisga New Year in 2022. Coming up next, we'll take a listen to our coverage of the All-Native Basketball Tournament in Prince Rupert.
Kayla Vickers, and I am playing for Kakatla Warriors.
Right on, Kayla. Maybe tell me how you guys been doing so far in the tournament.
Well, we came out strong in our first game, and we won 88-23 against Elliott Bay. They're newcomers, so it was good to see them out. And we had a tough loss against the defending champs from Kitimat. Came up 5 points short in the yesterday's game there. And now we're just tracking our way back to get to the finals.
Yeah, so you guys are on sudden death.
Yeah.
You know, you got to win this game. You're doing fairly well. We're at halftime. It's 43-18. I guess, how are you feeling about the game so far?
Good. We're doing really good. We're getting our young ones out there running, trying to control them and get them going so we can warm them up for the next game too. Yeah, our vets here are pulling it off for us though.
I guess, how many tournaments is this for you?
First, actually, since COVID, yeah. I haven't been playing. Oh, as a team?
Yeah.
Last 2020 we played, there was a bunch of us as the same. We have newcomer Christy Innes that just joined us. Marissa Innes, her sister, just joined us too. And I think Cadence Brooks, she's a newcomer, and Evelyn Innes just joined us too.
Right on.
Yeah, the rest of us are from the 2020 team.
And how do you feel like the team is gelling so far?
We're getting going. In our first two games, you know, we were just kind of trying to figure each other out. We don't get to play much as a team. You know, we all kind of live different areas here, and we're just trying to kind of find each other right now, just gelling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess for you, you know, the tournament, what does it mean for the All-Native tournament to be part of it and come back every year? It
means everything, you know. We have pride. You can see here with all the fans that are cheering for us. You know, Kakatla is a very small community, but they have a lot of heart, and they come and cheer every single game for every Warrior team.
Yeah.
It's great. It gives you goosebumps, you know.
Yeah,
a lot
of energy.
Yeah, it is. It's great. I love playing for Kakatla. My second year.
Nice.
So it's really nice to have these fans. They're so loud and so supportive with us.
Yeah, and I bet being back, you know, at it after COVID, you know, a couple of years of not having this and the fans, you know, probably feels pretty good.
It does. It was quite nervous our first game. You know, a lot of us were feeling that energy. We're just kind of not scared, nervous, very nervous. You know, we're like, oh my God, the fans, like they're so loud, like. It was more the fans that got to us than the actual game, you know. We're like, holy man, we missed this.
Yeah.
Playing for our home teams.
No doubt. I guess just the last couple of minutes here before you head back to it, you know, going into the second half, trying to keep up the points, what do you got to do with your team here?
Just play tough D, you know, smart. We're getting in a little bit of foul trouble here and there, but, you know, we're just going to run them like we usually do and play our game. Attack the hoop and try to get those calls for us.
All right. Well, thanks for your time. Good luck.
Thank you.
That was Kayla Vickers, captain of the women's Kakatla Warriors. Her team went on to win that nail butter of a game against Kinkolith. That was a little bit of our coverage of the All-Native Basketball Tournament in Prince Rupert in 2022. Coming up next, in early May, we headed out to the Wet'suwet'en Fish Camp at Maurice Lake as they established their smolt study on sockeye salmon. This work with Indigenous fisheries techs and scientists from Simon Fraser University is trying to better understand the changes in the lake and the watershed, how it affects salmon, and how those salmon are adapting to a changing climate.
holding tank, time.
Poor chap. Poor chap.
Do we have temperature?
On CSK News today, we visit the Wet'suwet'en Fisheries Camp at Maurice Lake, part of a smolt trapping program to better understand salmon productivity in the lake. This is also part of a larger effort to rebuild sockeye salmon populations within Wet'suwet'en territory, specifically Maurice sockeye, which have seen a dramatic drop in numbers over the last 50 years. I spent the day on Maurice Lake with salmon biologist Mike Price, as well as Brian Michel from Wet'suwet'en Fisheries, and Tisha Pierre with the Natural Resource Department at the Office of the Wet'suwet'en.
Okay. We're at 176 plus what?
18.
195.
Oh, yeah, you've been keeping track of morts. So it's at, the total catch is 142.
Price has been working with the Wet'suwet'en Fisheries for several years now, trying to deepen their understanding of the Maurice's productivity and what can be done to maintain and rebuild sockeye numbers in the watershed. Sockeye are a critical food source for the Wet'suwet'en Nation. Trapping smolts and getting a handle on how long they spend in the lake before heading to the ocean will help biologists determine sockeye survival rates in a few years when the current broodstock returns to spawn. But Price knows more about this than I do, so I'll let him explain.
We're at the outlet of Maurice Lake, where the Maurice River or Wet'suwet'en begins or originates. And it's in the heart of Wet'suwet'en territory. We have two passive traps at the outlet of the lake, essentially sitting in the water column to intercept juveniles that are leaving the lake en route to the ocean. So the fish generally passively enter the trap, and at the back of the trap is what's called a live box. So that's where the fish will congregate and seek refuge from the turbulent water of the trap. And so when we arrive in the morning, they're generally doing their thing, swimming around in that live box. We will then dip net them out of that live box and bring them up to our sampling station here on the beach to process them and try and extract as much information from them as possible.
And maybe walk me through the process. What do you do with the fish?
Well, we're taking their weight and length, so a general sort of indicators of health and size. We also extract some scales from them to give us an idea of how old these fish are. And sort of the overarching question is, what are the proportions of the different ages? So Wet'suwet'en or Maurice Lake and associated Atna Lake, it's known to be of relatively low productivity, and these fish tend to take more than a year to grow. So they can leave after 1 year, but often it's 2 years, sometimes it's 3 years. So getting a better sense of what the varying proportions are of those ages as they leave. And then we can look at the adults that return in 4 or 5 or 6 years and see, you know, what proportion of those different ages actually survived. At the end of the day, it gives us an idea of where mortality, what stage mortality may be occurring, whether these one-year-olds that leave, are they the fish that tend not to survive? Just some basic biological survival questions. You know, one of the important aspects of this project, in my view, besides, you know, getting a sense of sort of the ages and the proportions of ages, the sizes of these fish, which looking back through scale records over the last century does indicate these fish are growing more than they did in the past. So when they leave after 1 year, they are of a little bit larger size, which may translate to survival. I think that's important to document, sort of that continued change. Also, there was a similar project that took place in the early 1960s, so 1961, and we're trying to mirror that study, again, to get a sense of any changes that may have occurred over that time. But again, importantly, I think, in my view, one of the important aspects of this project is building capacity for the Wet'suwet'en, or having, you know, individuals like Brian Michelle or Gary Michelle or others like Vernon and Tisha, who are here today, to be on the land, on the territory, looking after their fish, monitoring these fish populations. I think that's one of the benefits of this project.
That was fisheries biologist Dr. Mike Price speaking about his work with the Wet'suwet'en Fisheries Program up at Maurice Lake and the establishment of the SMOLT program in May 2022. Up next, and finally, two political stories we brought you in 2022. Childcare in Smithers is in crisis and parents are calling on the federal and provincial governments to help. Despite lots of promises, there are still plenty of gaps and parents are struggling to find childcare for their kids. We'll take a look at the Now Hear This program that dug into this situation in Smithers. Also, we'll take a quick look back at the 2022 BC municipal elections. Hello and welcome to Now Hear This. I'm your host, Dan Messick. Now Hear This will take an in-depth look at some of Northwest BC's most pressing issues, the challenges they present, and the possible solutions developed right here at home. This podcast was made possible by the Government of Canada and the Community Radio Fund of Canada, the only organization mandated to financially supporting campus and community radio stations across Canada. On today's episode... Becoming a new parent is always a challenging and chaotic time, even more so if you have multiple young children running around, changing diapers, administering several feedings a day, and dealing with rolling tantrums. In Canada, and most of the Western world, maternity or parental leave can be weeks, months, or even more than a year long. And for many, this time is often spent in a certain level of isolation. There are exceptions, of course. Big families nearby, grandparents that pitch in, aunts and uncles that offer support, but oftentimes parents struggle to entertain their young children day in and day out. That's why early childhood education programs are critical in communities with lots of young children, especially those under five that haven't reached school age yet. I guess that's why when the word broke that School District 54, Bulkley Valley, decided to consolidate the two Strong Start programs currently offered in Smithers into one, due to available space and funding cutbacks, parents were outraged. But in speaking with parents about the impact of the loss of this service for our youngest citizens, the wider issue of childcare needs, especially in rural communities such as Smithers, Terrace, and Hazelton, seems to be getting worse as well. Despite the efforts by various governments to remedy the situation, the lack of childcare in the region is now in full crisis mode. For parents having to shift back to work, and the uncertainty about childcare just compounds the stress of raising children. The childcare crisis also has the ability to put a huge strain on our economy, potentially cutting out primarily women, who are often the primary caregivers of our children. Although governments are trying to deal with the situation currently, it will take years at best to create and provide enough spaces and capacity to accommodate all the families needing childcare. Fact is, they can't wait forever. First up, though, we'll dive into why School District 54 made the decision to consolidate the two Strong Start programs in Smithers into one, and how parents are responding and hoping to save the Muheim Strong Start.
Now Hear This. Now Hear This.
It's Matthew Monkman. I'm the Assistant Superintendent of Schools in SD 54 Bulkley Valley.
Great, Matthew. Thanks so much for being with us today. Of course, I know that a lot of people have brought this up just in the last day or so around the fact that the Strong Start program in Smithers is going to be rejigged a little bit for the rest of this year and following into 2023. We have two programs here in Smithers, Walnut Park and one at Muheim, and it sounds like they're going to be consolidated, but there are some concerns that were brought up to me. But maybe I'll ask you first as to why this decision was made to consolidate the two programs that currently exist in Smithers.
Yeah, thanks, Dan. The ministry has always funded the school district for three Strong Start locations, one in each of the communities, so Houston, Telqua, and Smithers. And over the years, the district has always seen value in Strong Starts and has tried to fund a third itself, so out of funds that we don't get specifically for strong starts. And so that's occurred off and on over the years. And so at this point, going into this upcoming year, as we saw, yes, we want to maintain the strong starts and the strong start in Smithers, but wanting to repurpose some of the funds as well for early learning, the decision was to maintain the strong start in Smithers, but actually relocate the program from where it has been at Muheim into Walnut Park School. And part of the decision there is largely around space. Walnut Park's a brand new building. There's a brand new strong start space that's specifically for that purpose. And Muheim School is always dire for looking for extra space. And so that was what led to that decision.
Coming up next, we speak with Taryn Opel. Taryn has two young children that have both been through the Muheim Strong Start program and questions why more effort wasn't made to find a new space for the Muheim Strong Start to continue. As a professional, she also has serious concerns about childcare in the community and is not 100% sure what she and her husband will do for childcare once she ends her current mat leave. I spoke to her shortly after hearing the two Smithers Strong Start programs would be consolidated starting in the fall of 2022.
My name is Taryn Opel. I'm a parent and I live here in Smithers, British Columbia. I have a 4-year-old and a 7-month-old.
Great, Taryn. Thanks so much for being with us. Obviously, there's some chatter going around town about the fact that we're going to lose one of the Strong Start programs in Smithers. We've had two Strong Start programs in Smithers for quite a while, for a few years now, and one is at Walnut Park, one at Muheim. And it seems like the one at Muheim is accessed quite a lot, especially in these last kind of number of months that we've come out of this COVID pandemic business. So maybe tell me firstly a little bit about your experience in going to Strong Start at Muheim, and what does that program mean to you and your kids?
Yeah, I mean, the Strong Start program in and of itself means so much to my family. I mean, to me as a parent, motherhood can be really challenging. You can feel isolated. It's hard to make connections with people. Sometimes you lose a bit of self-identity too in the transition. And so with my first son in particular, getting involved in Strong Start helped me to meet new people, new moms, new dads, and feel connected, and also helped me to kind of get out of the house and feel less of that isolated new mom feeling that I was having. And now that I have a second child, I feel like it's a whole different balancing act. And what Strong Start still means a lot of the same things to me. But more than that, it's an opportunity for my son to meet his peers, grow and learn together, work on his social skills. It's so invaluable. You know, that we know that 0 to 6, the early years, are so essential for development. And programs like this are places that people can go and their children can thrive with others in the community. So the connection piece is huge for me.
Taryn, I guess lastly for you, one, you know, what would you have liked to have seen done differently in this situation? And also two, if you do have a message for the school board about this, what would that message be?
Yeah, so things I'd like to, what I would have liked to have seen done differently, I would have liked to have seen some consultation with parents, just some, taking some time to understand how valuable the program is, understanding why people use it, how they access it, taking into consideration some of the factors before a decision was just made. The decision was just made, and I feel like there just wasn't a lot of time or energy put into finding out more about why the program is so great. Your second question, a message to the school board. I mean, I just want you to hear that there are so many parents in this community that feel strongly that these programs are essential, that these two programs should continue to run. And I would urge you to consider or reconsider the decision and take some time to hear our voices, hear our opinions, and hear our perspectives before you make this decision for the upcoming school year.
And last but not least, we'll take a quick look at some interviews we conducted with candidates, now councillors in Smithers, during the 2022 BC municipal elections in October.
So my name is Genevieve Patterson, and I want to recognize that I'm calling from the unceded traditional territory of the Wet'suwet'en people. I practice gratitude each day for the blessing I have to live, work, and play here in this beautiful area.
Okay, great. Genevieve, thanks so much for being with us today. You know, the question to you that I'm fielding to everyone, all the candidates right off the bat is, you know, with that, some of that in mind, obviously the town deals with a lot of other things as well. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about your platform and some of the things, some of the issues that you're trying to focus in on.
Absolutely. My pleasure. So I would just say supportive housing is sort of the first and foremost priority that I see within our community. It's not just specific to sort of some of the encampments that we see, but it's really about making sure that we're there to support all of our community members in need who struggle with mental health and addiction. From having the pleasure of being able to work with folks across not only our community, the North Area and the province, I really think for me, and having attended local council meetings recently, there's this opportunity to conduct a cost-benefit analysis and to develop a local long-term solution versus sort of these band-aid approaches that I see across not only our community, the North, and the province. So specific to Smithers, for example, we've seen an increase in community policing and bylaw enforcement and a tax increase as a result. Again, that is a band-aid solution to be able to resolve the long-term issue that's needed around supportive housing. And the difference between supportive housing, I just want to be really clear, is about providing the necessary supports around mental health and addiction that we all suffer with. And I think it's more prevalent not only within our community in the last year or so, but across the North Area. I travel quite a bit across the North, and it's absolutely not unique to our community, but it is so important for the health and wellness of our community. I think the best approach that we can actually be able to deliver on that commitment and save taxpayers' dollars is by working together. So I love that you talked about sort of the starting point of the relationship between the town and the Office of the Wet'suwet'en. There's so much more work that needs to be done with our Indigenous partners and our community, as well as engagement with the federal and provincial governments. There's an incredible amount of work being done for non-for-profits within our community. And the private sector to develop more supportive housing just to meet our current demand. Some examples, I think we need to capitalize on the Homelessness Community Action Grant that's being proposed by the provincial government. You know, they promised $291 million to build these modular supportive housing across BC that's supposed to include 24/7 staffing and support services. And I know the town has done just an exceptional amount of work to support our community in building affordable housing. So I really just want to work with my fellow, you know, councillors and mayor and our community just to keep that momentum going. There's also this new memorandum of understanding between local government around this financial resiliency. And I really want to understand how we can, you know, just get a little bit more clarity on that, because it talks about community wellness being one of their top priorities. When I read it, it's still not super clear to me on how we can do that. So I'm hoping we can work together just to get them to be really clear in how they can help to develop more supportive housing for us, including access to Crown land, and just to make more contributions. Like, so, for example, I understand the local health authority and hospital gave up a significant amount of their necessary land to help to support those in need. I want to see the provincial government match that contribution.
My name is Laura Leonard. I grew up in Smithers. I wasn't born there, born in Prince George, grew up in Smithers. And after a brief hiatus attending post-secondary school in Vancouver, I moved back in 1997 and have been back in Smithers ever since. It's 25 years helping and now running our family business there, All With Glass.
Great, Laura. Thanks so much for being with us and making the time to chat with us. Obviously, as you mentioned, this is your first time running for Smithers Council, but you've been around for a while, so I'm sure you've seen many councils come and go. Maybe, you know, tell us a little bit about yourself and why you decided to run this time.
I've always had an interest in municipal politics at an early age. At an adolescent, my mother was a school district trustee and then an alderman, and became the first female mayor of Smithers. And that was all through late 80s and 90s. And so we've always been I've always been exposed to it. And, you know, our family has sort of a a deep sense of giving back to communities that support us and our business, and I have always done that. Through different associations I've belonged to in the community, helped out a lot with the Rotary Club. I was served on the BV Community Foundation for 6 or 8 years. I can't even remember how long that was, and then also on BV Health Foundation for a number of years. So I've always sort of felt the need to do something in the community, and I've dabbled in running before at previous elections. I've had a lot of people approach me and see if I would run. And so anyway, I finally, I'm coming off another board that I serve on, and it's a provincial business board. And my tenure's up in November for that. And my children are both grown and out of the house and don't need as much attention anymore. So just felt like the time was right to get more involved and see if I could add some value and some balance to how funds are being appropriated at the municipal level and in the fairest way possible on behalf of all the taxpayers in the region.
My name is Sam Raven. My pronouns are she and her. And I reside on the beautiful territory of the Gitindam clan of the Wet'suwet'en Nation. I was born and raised in the beautiful Bulkley Valley in Telkwa. So my parents are Steve and Susan Schaffnerwich. I moved to the Kootenays when I was 18, where I met my husband, and then we came back to Smithers, where we are currently raising our 3 very active children. We moved back here because we love being surrounded by nature, and it really suits our lifestyle. We do hiking, we do fishing, we love doing backcountry adventures together. I worked in Smithers as a community support worker for 8 years, supporting adults with disabilities. And the last about year and a half, I have been working as a constituency assistant to the MLA.
Great, Sam. Thanks so much for being with us today and giving us your time. Obviously, sounds like you're a bit of a hometown girl. And with that, obviously you've probably know quite a number of people in the community, but it looks like you're new to municipal politics. I know that you ran once before, but maybe tell me how things are going this time around.
Sure. So yes, I did run in the by-election a couple years ago when the council seat opened up, and that was a wonderful experience. Of course, very different compared to this time around, because at that time there was restrictions and all of that in place. But this time around, I'm feeling really positive. I've been getting out in the community, attending events. So like recently there was a Terry Fox run. There's the farmers market on Saturdays that I've been attending. And it's been so great to connect and actually be able to talk to people. I've even been doing some door knocking, and that has been a super, super positive experience. So I'm happy to be out and about, that's for sure.
That was just a little bit of our coverage from the 2022 BC municipal elections here in Smithers. That wraps up part 2 of my year in review. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll be back in 2023 to dig into a lot more local news in the coming months. So stay tuned. Happy New Year, and you've been listening to CICK News.